Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. If you're new to this show, you've come to the right place to see and hear some of the best true crime content anywhere. My guest this week is Eddie Diaz, a decorated combat veteran and a retired Orlando police officer. But I warn you, his retirement wasn't accomplished the traditional way. So more to come on that in just a few minutes. First, I want to say thank you for listening to and watching Game of Crimes. As you know, I've started posting the video interviews from some of our guests, which is a new thing for Game of Crimes. You may see a couple of glitches here and there, but I'm working to get all that stuff taken care of. But I've also seen some of your comments wondering why Game of Crimes doesn't have more views. Believe me, I have the same question. I'm working on a couple of things to bring more awareness to Game of Crimes, but this is where you come in. If you're watching this on YouTube, do me a favor right now. Click on the share button, on the subscribe button, and the like button. Share this with all your friends. The actions are free and they only take a second, but it really helps promote the show. Believe me, I know none of this would be possible without your support, and I appreciate you giving me your time. As a reminder, if you're looking for more content, check us out on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. There you'll find bonus episodes each month ranging from serious to silly, and you can also get early audio access to each week's interviews before they drop on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. A quick disclaimer here, this is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things. We talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. Believe me, I do take these stories seriously, but what's wrong with having a little laugh at the expense of some of these crazy criminals and what the cops have to put up with? As I mentioned, this week's guest is Eddie Diaz, true blue bona fide patriot and combat hero who served our country and was decorated multiple times for heroism in combat. Afterwards, Eddie earned his college degree, and then he joined the Orlando Police Department. Now, that's an agency I have the utmost respect for, especially since I live here in Orlando. But one fateful night, Eddie conducted a traffic stop that resulted in a deadly encounter that changed his life forever, an encounter that left Eddie lying in the street after being shot 8 times. Thank God Eddie survived to tell his story. Unfortunately, another Orlando officer, George DeSalvia, made the ultimate sacrifice that night and lost his life, backing up another officer and doing what he loved. With Eddie's concurrence, I'm dedicating today's episodes to the memory of Orlando police officer George DeSalvia. End of watch, February 3rd, 2000. Rest in peace, brother. As horrible as all this sounds, Eddie's story is one of recovery, of perseverance, of personal strength, of focus, of never giving up, of having family support, and yes, of forgiveness. I'm so proud and honored to have Eddie Diaz on Game of Crimes. I can't tell you enough about that. But to hear Eddie's story and all his adventures, you know what comes next. It's time to get in, sit down, shut up, and hold on. Welcome back to the biggest, baddest, and truly the most dangerous game of all, the Game of Crimes. Hey, players. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Got another special guest here. I know I say that every week, but you know, we bring some phenomenal people on this show, and today's no exception. He's got a story that you're not going to believe. It's a story of resilience, of determination, of recovery. I mean, it's almost to the point where I was not going to do small town police blotter. But after talking to our guest, if you're not laughing, if you don't have tears rolling down your cheek after today's episode, there's something wrong with it. You don't have a sense of humor. We've been sitting here talking for almost 30 minutes before we started recording, and I've had to wipe my eyes twice. So if you see me wiping my eyes, that's what I'm doing. I've been laughing quite a bit this morning. His name is Eddie Diaz, former Marine Corps, how do you say that, Eddie? Former?
Navy Corpsman.
No,
I was a Navy Corpsman attached with the Marines.
There you go. And also, he's retired from the Orlando Police Department, and you'll find out why such a young man is retired once we get into the story. But before we get on going anywhere, I want to talk to you about small town police blotter. Now, we've had a few technical issues this morning. That's what led to all the 30 minutes of storytelling. I tell you, I got dry my eyes again here because I've been laughing so much. But last week I had the guest read one of our stories, and we were going to do the same today. But Eddie's got some computer issues over there, so you're stuck with me. And before we get into these stories, we've got a quick disclaimer I have to tell you about. This is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things. We talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. And we do take these stories seriously. But you know, what's wrong with having a laugh at the expense of this, some of these stupid criminals that are out there and the crap that police officers have to put up with, right? So today's stories come to us. The first one is from Oregon. Here we go. An Oregon man did not make a clean getaway. Remember that clean getaway early Sunday after stealing a street sweeper and leading police on a 10-mile chase in a street sweeper. According to the cops, Tyler Hagwood, 33, jumped into the street sweeper around 3:45 a.m. What the heck's he doing at 3:45 a.m.?
Why not? Nothing better to do, right?
Exactly. So Tyler jumps in after the driver, a private contractor, exited the running vehicle to use the, he was using a handheld blower to clean off areas of the parking lot that the sweeper couldn't reach. Well, Hagwood, then he drove off in the Isuzu street sweeper. Upon learning of the theft, cops in Hillsboro, a city 20 miles south outside of Portland, quickly located the vehicle in the deserted pre-dawn streets. Officers activated their overhead emergency lights. The street sweeper failed to yield, cops said. For 10 miles, they pursued the street sweeper, reaching speeds of up to 65 miles an hour. I didn't know those things could go that fast.
Really? Wow. Felony stop.
There you go. Well, and here's this. You can guess how they stopped it. You'll take a guess before I tell you.
Do they use the spikes?
Spike strips. You got it. They threw.
Are you serious?
Strips. Yep. Washington County Sheriff's Office. They threw them out there, and that's how they stopped this. Hagwood was taken into custody without incident, charged with multiple counts, including auto theft and attempting to elude police. He's also facing a parole violation charge in connection with prior conviction for aggravated harassment. Why do these people always have outstanding warrants? They all do.
Why do they call attention unto themselves, right?
Especially exactly in this fashion. Right.
It's like you know, stole a bicycle. It's a street sweeper.
It's almost like that guy, catch me if you can.
Well, you think that they're not going to locate you? I mean,
you're a street sweeper. It's not like you're on a Ducati motorcycle or something where you can get away. Yep. And in our second story, this one comes to us from Louisiana. I don't think we've ever had any from Louisiana. Mm. A man wearing a gorilla costume.
Oh, see, that's all you got to say. You don't need to say anything else right there. You know it's all going to go bad.
It's going downhill from there.
It's yeah.
It's true. He broke into a Louisiana resident, according to the cops, who fought with the suspect after finding him hiding under a mattress. Because, you know, you would think if you had a gorilla costume on, you would blend right in with furniture, right? Jeez. Police in Sulphur, a city about 20 miles east of the Texas border, responded Wednesday evening to a call about a suspicious man dressed in an all-black outfit, prowling around homes and peeping into windows. A little pervert. When officers located the suspect, later identified as Jeremy Joseph Moran, and that should be moron, 34 years old, certainly old enough to know better. He fled into a nearby residence, wow, ignoring police demands to stop. So it's not bad enough that he's a pervert. Now he's breaking into a house, an occupied house. During the subsequent search of the house, cops found Moron beneath a mattress. He was wearing a black gorilla suit at the time. Moron tussled with cops trying to handcuff him, but he was eventually subdued and placed under arrest. He was charged with multiple offenses, including unauthorized entry of an inhabited dwelling, methamphetamine possession. Well, there is a big shock.
Imagine that.
Resisting a police officer with violence or force and wearing a mask or hood in public. Moron, who lives in the neighboring city of Vinton, remains caged on the felony and misdemeanor counts. And I can't pronounce it, at the Calcasieu Correctional Center. Ask about the defendant's gorilla outfit. A police spokesman said the only reason Moron would have opted for the costume was the possibility of the drugs he was using. And you know what, Eddie? You probably don't know this yet, but we have a saying here on Game of Crimes. And what's our saying? Kids, don't do meth. And this is what it leads to when you do.
I mean, how do you explain that? Eventually, when you come off that high, how do you ever explain that to anybody? You know, to your family, to... Like when you're locked up, what are you going to tell the dude next to you? I was running around in a gorilla costume. Yeah, no, I mean, really?
I was a pervert peeking in
windows. How's that for street cred? How does that even work?
Oh, that's crazy.
Oh, my God.
As I mentioned, today's guest is Eddie Diaz. Welcome to the show, Eddie. It's a pleasure to have you on here, brother.
Thank you, Murph. Appreciate it.
And just to let you know how we met, we have some mutual friends. There's a few police officers here in Orlando who are avid Game of Crimes listeners. Rob Hernandez, who's with FDLE, Jose Vicente, who's former OPD, and Alex, brother, I'm calling your last name unknown because I can't remember your last name. I apologize. I'll make it up to you. I'll buy you a beer or lunch or something. But these guys, what they do, they like Game of Crime so much, they're starting a podcast of their own. And the difference is it's going to be very similar to Game of Crimes, where they have a guest on every show. The difference is theirs is going to be all in Spanish. They haven't started yet. They're getting some interviews done. I think they've already interviewed Eddie. They called me and said, hey, here's the super guy to get on your show. And their podcast is going to be Llamados a Servir, okay? Called to Serve. Once they go live, you'll hear me talking about it. I'm going to do everything I can to help promote these guys. I've already sent them a list of every Spanish-speaking guest we've had on the show here in the last 3+ years. So they've got a lot of ground to choose from. They've invited my old DEA partner, Javier Pena, to come on and tell them, guys, when you hear my Spanish, I talk like hola, y'all. It's going to be a little rough, but they're going to translate for me. But you know what? And that's the thing. That's a perfect example of the law enforcement culture and brotherhood and sisterhood, where I get people from all around the United States and actually some other countries too call and say, or they'll text me or they'll send a message on email and like, hey, Murph, how about this guy? This is what he's done. And I'll look him up. And if I don't know him, I didn't know Eddie, I'll vet you pretty hard. But you came with very good recommendations. So it was pretty easy to vet you through here and get you in. But
well, I
love
it.
That's cops looking out for cops. So
that's true. That's very true.
So now let's get into Eddie's story today. And Eddie, just kind of walk us through your life here. Where did you grow up? What are your family dynamics, your siblings, the schools you went to, that kind of thing?
Sure. I was born and raised in San Juan, Puerto Rico. My father is from Puerto Rico. My mom is from a little town called Farmville, Virginia.
I know where Farmville is.
That's where my mom was born and initially raised. She eventually moved to Puerto Rico and she did school there. Met my father in college and subsequently they got married. I'm the only child. I don't have any siblings. I don't have any, you know, like immediate extended family like that. I don't have any, but I was raised there and lived a little while I was growing up. We moved to Florida briefly, Miami. That's where I picked up English because I didn't know, English was my second language. And we ended up moving back home and I did high school in Puerto Rico. I went to a school called American Military Academy. And it's kind of interesting because I was at that precarious age where my folks were starting to get a little bit, you know, of trouble with me. I wasn't getting in trouble with the law or anything. I was just acting out. And my parents were getting divorced. At the time, they were getting divorced. And so I was just rebelling. And they said, you know what? We think he probably would benefit from military school. They did it with the thought of like, it'll keep him honest. It'll keep him good and out of trouble and disciplined. Little did they know that what they did was just foster a love that I developed for all things military, police stuff. It's just created that want and that need within me. I graduated from there, from American Military Academy in Puerto Rico. I was supposed to go to college. I had set it all up, but in the meantime, I had also thought to join the military. Mm-hmm. And at 17, I convinced my parents to sign off and letting me join the Navy.
Were they like, home, thank God he's out of here.
We don't have any more problems with this kid. And he's out. And it's funny because back home, most people, they join the Army. It's almost like a cultural thing. I'm going to join the U.S. Army. Fewer joined the Marines. Fewer joined the Navy. Fewer joined the Air Force. I really joined the Navy with the thought of being on a ship. And I just want to float. I want to go see the world. Mm-hmm. I know I've lived in Miami briefly. I've lived in a tropical island, but it's only 95 by 35. So my travel was limited to an extent at that time. And I just want to see the world. I convinced them. They figured, okay, well, he'll make a career out of that. And and that's fine. They wanted me to go to school, but they came to the realization it might not be for him. I always told them, I'll go, just not right now. Mm-hmm. I ended up joining and the Navy. And sadly, my naval career only took me 21 days on a ship. I don't even know how that happens. How do you join the Navy and that happens? But
wow.
Yeah, only 21 days actually on a ship.
Was that was that because of the occupation you chose?
That's correct. That's correct.
Which
was? I was a medic. And initially, I went to boot camp and medic school, which is corpsman school. Mm-hmm. In California. At the time, it was I went to San Diego for boot camp, Balboa Naval Hospital for medical training. And I really wanted to work in that setting. But when you're young, you don't know a whole lot. And you're like, oh, sure. They had asked for a show of hands as to who wants to go back to the East Coast. And my mom had remarried, which coincidentally, it was her high school sweetheart. They ran into each other and ended up getting married. And they moved back to Florida. So I was like, I'll go to the East Coast. I'll go. Be closer to home, right? And then they say, okay, well, good, because that's in 2nd Marine Division in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And I was like, hold up, is that the Naval Hospital? They're like, no, the fleet. And I was like, hold up a second.
So nobody had ever told you before you went in the military, never raise your hand, never volunteer for anything, right?
You know what? Maybe they had told me. I just thought that it didn't apply to me. I was like, I'll be okay. This doesn't apply to me. So then I went to Camp Pendleton in California and did what's called Field Medical Service School. And that's where they train the Navy corpsmen in all ways of the Marine Corps infantry, basically. It's like a school of infantry of sorts. But I loved it. I mean, I just utterly loved it. Thought it was the greatest thing. So I went to Camp Lejeune subsequently. And I was with 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, Weapons Company, 81 millimeter mortars initially. Then I ended up getting transferred to Bravo Company. And that was another one, right? Because I get there, I'm doing time with the mortar platoon. And and I always like, man, every time we go on these long humps, right, on these road marches, and we road march for like 10, 12 miles, and we're carrying the mortar tube on and the rounds, all this stuff like a pack mule, right?
Yep.
And then we get to our site, and then we got to dig the mortar pit, to dig the ammo pit. And I was like, there has to be a better way, because I see all my buddies, and they're in regular infantry platoons, and they don't do this stuff.
Yeah.
So through time, I'm like, I want to give that a shot. So I get transferred to the Lion Company. Only, see, this is when you're young and you are dumb and you don't think about things twice. Little did I realize, okay, when a regular platoon goes out to the field and they've marched for 10 or 12 miles, well, but when they set up the little bivouac area and they go on patrol, so they go out and walk some more. So you just walk 12 miles and now you're going to go walk another two or three on a patrol. So there was no easy way. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to embrace the suck. And I just, I'm going to embrace it. And I ended up with the rest of my time, I was in Bravo Company. And let me tell you, Murph, that experience, probably it was the second best job, the second best career I've had in my life. I loved every minute of it. Even when it really sucked, I still loved it. I got to see the world, a lot of the Pacific. We did some dog and pony shows with some of the South and Central American countries back in the day, a thing called UNITAS. But mainly I saw the Pacific, but we flew everywhere. We didn't float. We just would fly. And
let me ask you, you being a Navy corpsman based down with a bunch of Marines, do you catch any crap over that?
I always did, because especially when we had like inspections, because I had the chance to use Marine regs, but I said, no, I'm in the Navy. So you would have all these Marines in their dress blues, and I would be in my own dress blues, which were black, or if it was the summertime, they'll be in their greens or whatever, and I'm in my dress whites. So I would stick out like a sore thumb. With my little Dixie cup, and my little neckerchief around my neck. But this was actually probably my singular best and smartest decision serving with these guys, was that when Gunny would come by, or Sergeant Major, or the captain, they were not in tune with Navy regs. So they would just look me over, look at my uniform, and kind of like say some smart comment about what I'm wearing. And it always had something to do with my sexuality. it always pertained to that somewhere along the way. That got tied in. Come on, Doc. That looks really beep, you know? And I was like, yeah. Guys, come on, you know? But see, out of reverence, they do call you Doc. And so that was kind of neat. But it always was something like that. But they were not in tune with Navy regs. So not that my uniform was slack. I mean, I took a lot of pride in it. But they kind of like were not as hard on me as they would be in a Marine in their dress blues. So,
but
once you prove your mettle and, you know, like what you're capable of. And I was a young man. I was in great shape. I mean, I could run forever. I was thin. I mean, I was just you're in your best cardio of your life, like literally. Then they respect you. And you do little things along the way. When we would get deployed, corpsmen don't stand fire watch. We don't need to stand fire watch in the middle of the night. I always made it a point. No, I'm part of the team. Put me in the rotation. So every so often when it was my turn, I'm getting up at whatever time it was designated. I'm standing watch for 2, 3, 4 hours while they slept.
Yeah.
And these guys, they see that. They appreciate that. I was able to keep up.
Yep.
And then when one of them would fall down, I was right there to take care of them. So I had a very positive experience. I'm sure that there's plenty of corpsmen that don't, but I thought it was the greatest thing. I had a fun time doing it.
You earned everybody's respect by doing things you didn't have to do. And then you made yourself part of the team.
That's correct.
And if anybody's wondering, that's what you call leadership. You know, that's how you ingratiate yourself into those that are busting your chops every day just because you're Navy. And, you know, all the Marines I've ever worked with, they refer to the Navy as a taxi driver. So
that's right. You give us a ride there. You're our Uber.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, and you're right. And it was a two-way street. Like I made sure to learn how to use the mortar. Like I could gun. Mm-hmm. I made sure that I could shoot. I would go on patrols. I mean, they would give me my 9mm, which was a standard weapon. It was a pistol because I'm supposed to be a non-combatant, but I'm attached with Marines. Well, how realistic is that I'm a non-combatant when you're attached with a platoon of Marines? Probably not much. Yeah. You know, so no, give me that M16. You know, I mean, you know, where do I get my frag grenades? Because you know what? I want to throw some too. You know, I mean, when the time comes. And then I would teach them things. You know, hey, guys, this is how you do an IV. This is how you give a shot. You know, this is how you do a proper splint, you know, for something. This is how you may be called to. We got to intubate somebody. This is how we're going to do it. Because we're out in the field and you know, you don't always have a doctor there. So.
Right. And you stand a chance of being wounded in combat as quickly as they do. You know,
absolutely.
You want them to be able to help take care of you. And if you have multiple casualties, you got to go one at a time. So if they even got the basics, maybe they can help their buddy out until you get there.
Listen, that's
forward thinking, man.
You know, I mean, and I didn't really do it, believe it or not, even for those reasons back then. Now that I look back upon it, I'm like, oh, man, that was great. I did that. And a lot of the guys I stay in touch with in Facebook and whatnot. And you know, and they reminisce and like, oh, Doc, do you remember when you taught us this? Or like one of my first things, and they always laugh about it. One of the basic things that you taught these guys is to take a rectal temperature. And you say, well, what a rectal temperature be because we go on these road marches and these guys pass out because they're not the ones that are going to tell you, hey, I'm not feeling good. No. These guys will go and then they're falling out flat on their face. Mm-hmm. And then you got to take a core temperature to know how to treat these guys. I mean, is he having heat stroke? Is he at 106 temperature? You're in deep trouble. Mm-hmm. The only way to really get an accurate temperature is a rectal one. So you know how fun that was teaching these guys. Once again, see, and this is where it all ties into those inspections that I would do with the gun and that they would be calling me names because, yeah, you're the guy, man. You're the guy that's doing this stuff to us. But listen,
I can't imagine.
You can't make it up. And it was always like, Doc, what do you have the Motrin? Yes. Do you have the foot powder? Yes. Do you have the KY jelly? Yes. I got it all, man. Don't worry about it. You know, let's just go. Let's go on this march. It's just the little things. And when you're young and you're a hard charger, you're high speed, low drag, you're running the gun in. You don't think about like these things, and it's just fun.
How many years were you in the Navy?
I was only there for 4.5. 4.5 years.
Did you serve in a combat theater?
I did. I was in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then prior to that with Just Cause with Noriega.
Wow. Wow. So you were down in Panama. So that's, mm-hmm. Wow. I didn't know that one. I did some research on you, but I didn't know about Just Cause.
Yeah.
But so two deployments over to the Middle East?
One deployment for 9 months. It was one long one.
In doing your, I'm sorry to keep interrupting you here, but I can't wait to say the next thing. In your action and in your duties, you were recognized more than once for activities over there, weren't you?
Yes. Yes, I was.
And that resulted in, what did you receive?
Bronze stars.
How many?
Combat action ribbons. I have my little shadow box. It might be behind me somewhere, but it was funny. I really haven't talked a whole lot about that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, in my life, but, received a few commendations. And it was, you know, looking back upon it now, you like wonder, why did I do that again? Why exactly?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? What prompted me at that moment in time to do that? But, I got my mainly, which was coveted, it was my combat bad action ribbon and the bronze stars.
But how many bronze stars?
Four.
Oh, man. So, okay. And so these are, I'm sure they were earned during combat.
They were, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're being humble about this, and I'm not pushing you to talk about something you're not comfortable talking about. If you don't want to talk about it, we'll move right along here. But I've just got to recognize you for what you did, because I don't know a lot of guys that got a bronze star. The fact that you got four of them over there in 9 months' time, holy cow, what the hell were you doing? Leading a one-man charge every day going out of the barracks?
You know what happens is they always had a shortage of foremen. That's the mm-hmm. thing. And in some cases, you had to augment other units at the time. But they might do things a little differently now. But back when I was there, when I was in, even within your battalion, but sometimes they had to pull you to go with other units, with other battalions or other, at the time, forward units who were doing reconnaissance that were, prepping everything, getting it ready for the mm-hmm. big ground assault. And then subsequently, once the ground assault started, even though it was a very quick war, if you want to say, for the time that we're actually in combat. But I remember, we were in sustained. And I say sustained because it was just constant. When we went over the breach, it was, it was February 24th, 1994. No, I'm sorry. It was 1990. Mm-hmm. I was 19 years old. That's it. I was just 19 years old. When I got to the unit, I was 17. And within months, then we did Just Cause, first of all. And then we had Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And from the time it started to the time it ended, and it ended on my birthday, the 27th of February, which was the best birthday gift in the crappiest situation that I could ever be in at the time. Mm-hmm. I was like, we were in constant. It was constant mounting and going, mounting and moving. And even though a lot of the people back home, I'm sure, saw the trenches that were cleared and the Iraqis giving mm-hmm. up, and we were rounding them up and whatnot, There was a huge part of that wasn't like that. You know, you always got your hard charging guys, you know, mm-hmm. and they don't want to comply and they don't want to give up. And then, and I was always part of that train. You know, I was never in the front. I can't say I was. They wouldn't let me be in the front. I probably would have been like, do I really got to be in the front? Really? Am I the point guy here? Is there anybody else who wants to do this? You know, but
somehow I doubt that.
But I was always in the train, and those words always, the corpsman up, mm-hmm. or when things get hectic, it was not even that, it was just doc. It was much different from the war that our boys have recently fought overseas for 20 years. But at the time, for those 4 days, I'm talking, it was intense. I mean, we even got some shells dropped on us, and it was mustard gas.
So you had to put your mask on?
We had to do the mop gear on and everything. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but that's not really out there or documented or whatnot, but we had the mop gear. And the artillery and just the small arms fire. I mean, and it was it was a lot going on. I mean, you know, and there was a lot going on before, even when we got in country. I was I was in a rear station, and I was just walking down this camp with some of my friends, and somebody comes out and just, "You're running. We need a corpsman. Where's Doc?" Any doc. And I remember running into this makeshift barrack that was used for oil workers. They had housed us there. And this young Marine had put the M16 right to his head and pulled the trigger. And he wasn't gone, but he was in gravely injured. And you smell that, like that smell of blood, smell of organs. And, and here I am just trying to patch this guy up. And it's just, these things happen. I mean, so even beforehand, it got going. It was a little bit, it's sometimes presented a little bit sanitized, I think, back home. And maybe that's just how it needs to be presented, because sometimes the public is not ready.
Yeah, I think there are so many of us. I was never in the military. I was a cop for 38 years. I saw a different kind of combat than what you saw. It wasn't open warfare, although sometimes it seemed like it.
Well, yeah.
But I'm sure you did. Most people in the United States have never seen or endured that. And that's why we always, I'm a big proponent of supporting our veterans. There's a group, I got to speak to the Corps Medical Group's third annual Military Appreciation Weekend back in March of this year up in Beaufort, South Carolina. And I will continue to support the military. I mean, you guys are studs. You served your country. You didn't hesitate. I thought you would have learned not to raise your hand again after that first time. But
I don't know what's wrong with
learners.
Me. What's wrong with me? So many things, right?
Again, I don't want to put you in a spot where you're not comfortable. But can you say what you received the Bronze Stars for? What was the caption when they presented you with those medals?
It was for actions taken during combat operations. The reality is, Murph, it's really just doing my job. I mean, and that's the honest to God's truth. It's just doing what I was supposed to do. But they always, when it's presented, it's always do your, bravery under combat, actions taken, that exposed you unnecessarily, to enemy fire, where you risked your own life, in essence, to save the life of another person.
Brother.
But when you really think about it, it was just when I was just a 17-year-old kid going through field medical service school, and the instructors are teaching us, somebody goes down, one of your boys goes down. I mean, and they're screaming for you. You have got to get your butt out there. You have got, and it's usually in the kill zone. You've got to get in the kill zone and pull people back.
Exactly. Because for our listeners, I mean, you think about it, they're not getting shot back where it's safe behind the lines. They're out on the front lines, and that's where you get shot. That's where you get injured. And when that guy gets injured, they don't stop battle. The battle continues. And so here goes Eddie running straight up there, right in the line of fire, man. I'm so freaking proud of you, what you did. I just talk about being a patriot. Know you're taking care of your brothers and sisters out there on the field, but the level of courage required to do that, I can't even fathom. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
In that moment, you don't think about it. Later on, you're like, man, I should not have gone and got your butt out there, man. This is just nuts that I did that for you. Are you kidding me? I should have just left you. What are you?
Yeah, yeah.
But
now you're giving me a hard time, and I saved your butt.
That's right. And you're talking about how I was running. I couldn't even almost carry you. What are you talking about? I dragged you. But like the reality is listen, I just always prayed that my guys were laying down some good cover fire. I swear to you, I always prayed, and I always prayed that the enemy had bad aim, and it was just like, I got to do what I got to do. And sometimes you really want to get in and out. Mm-hmm. That's not always possible. It depends on the injury. Right. When you're extracting somebody, that might go a little bit slower than you planned because of whatever injury. You might not be able to fireman carry them. Mm-hmm. You might not. You just might have to grab them by their flak jacket and start pulling them back while trying to stay as low as you can. And sometimes you're returning fire yourself. Sometimes you got to stay put for a second to apply a tourniquet or apply a bandage because the loss of blood, you just see it, that bright red arterial blood is coming out. So you have to.
That's not a good thing.
No, that guy will not have 30 seconds you pulling him back. So, but nevertheless, I mean, I just, in that moment, I would joke with my guys afterwards. I was like, you know what? I was willing to go do that because I was more afraid of the crap that you guys would give me if I didn't get out there. I would never be able to live it down. So I was like, so I was out there with you guys. But you know what? It was really, aside from being an officer, I mean, it's just the greatest honor of my life. Mm-hmm. I've never, have had, those experiences again. Thankfully, I get one of my guys every so often. He still texts me. I did save his life. He just every so often, just thank me. Hey, I remember this. Thank you. Where's my birthday? I'm still here. Thank you.
I can't kind of things. I can't think of a better. Oh my gosh.
I'm just listen. I'm grateful that I'm still around. Grateful, and I'm fortunate. I love my country. I love my guys. I love what I did. I love that I served. And I'm just grateful that I was able to do my little part. Yep. I was able to put my two grains of sand.
Some of our listeners might be thinking that sit around and laugh about this now. And even when you got back off the line, back to where it was safe and you're joking around with your buddies, it's a defense mechanism. That's how you handle stuff that human beings are not meant to see, this kind of gory, horrific attacks on each other where it maims and mutilates other people. And it's, you got to find a way to deal with it. Unfortunately, a lot of guys deal, with it through alcohol or other drugs, or like the guy with the M16, and you don't want to see that. So that's what that's about. Also, I believe that the good Lord gives us all special talents. I believe that we're all here on earth for a reason. Like me, it takes me a whole lot longer to figure things out than it probably does you or anybody else. And when I'm slow, I think God takes a 2x4 and slaps me in the head with it. But it wasn't, the point of saying that is it wasn't his plan for you to die over there. And it wasn't his plan for you to die in an incident we're going to talk about here in a few minutes either.
Right.
It's just amazing what goes on. You believe what you want to believe. I believe there's a man upstairs that takes care of all of us. And I believe that when it is your time to die, he knows when that is. And I could be sitting here talking to you and fall out of my chair dead from a heart attack.
Correct.
Going out to get my truck or whatever. I may be getting there watching TV and just pass out and that's it.
Correct.
But the thing with me, and I think with you too, Eddie, because we talked about this on the pre-call a little bit, is I'm good with it. I don't have a death wish. I don't want to die. But no. I'm pretty safe. I'm pretty secure in where I'm going to be after I do die.
Right. I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, I've lived a pretty full life. In my short life, I've lived a pretty full life, and I'm good with it. I mean, I'm pretty secure where I'm going, what I believe in, what my faith is, and I do believe that when your time is here, and now, I don't believe that you'll get a second more or a second less. You'll get the exact amount of time that you're supposed to be on this earth.
I'm with you.
And as a young man, it wasn't my time, I was happy to be able to do what I did. And then we got back home. And I remember that they asked me, they come around trying to gauge where people, if they're going to re-enlist, like re-up. Mm-hmm. And I must've looked at this guy like he was insane. I was like,
oh, hell no.
No, heck no, I'm doing that. No way, man. No, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I knew I wanted to go to school, and I applied, and I got into Florida State.
Oh, Seminoles.
Listen, so, I went there for all the wrong reasons. So, all the wrong reasons. And once again, God intervening.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yes.
You got out of the military in 1992, right? And then
correct.
So now you got the GI Bill to put you through college. That's fantastic.
I had the GI Bill. I'd saved a little bit better of money while I was in the military. And I had done all my stuff. I mean, I had to take like prep courses in English and in math just to be able to take the SAT. Because I'm 4 years removed from high school. Remember that, you know. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the skill set that I've learned doesn't translate to just academia at the time. But I did that. And I remember I was in some more training in 29 Palms in the Marine Corps base there, doing desert warfare, as a matter of fact, and mail call. And I got my letter, my admissions letter from Florida State at the time, because back then it was snail mail. It wasn't like email.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember like dancing around the freaking Amtrak that we were riding in. I was like, I'm out of here. Y'all can keep it. Done my time.
Oh, that's good.
It was great. But it's funny how I got there. Another buddy of mine who was also a corpsman at the time, he was an E5, I was an E4. He used to be a big Florida State fan. And I asked him, I mean, because this guy was diehard. I go, Rich, his name is Rich Barker. I go, Rich, why are you enlisted? You went to Florida State. Me being asking a dumb question, being a dumb kid, right? And he goes, Eddie, I went to Florida State, but I failed out. I had such a good time. I failed out and I had to enlist because I had nothing else going on. I said, oh, okay. Well, right. I was on writing my leave 4 days to drive down from Camp Lejeune to Tallahassee. I'm there. Uh-huh. This guy failed out. I got to go check this place out. Did they offer what I wanted to study, which was business? Sure. Okay. I'm going to check it. Got to check it out. So I got in my car and I took 4 days off and drove to Tallahassee because this, my buddy had gone there, had failed out because he partied so much, thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And I was like, that sounds like it's for me. I'm there. All the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I might have done that too.
All the wrong reasons. And I remember getting there and I loved the place. I fell in love with Tallahassee. I fell in love with FSU. The history, the architecture, just the town itself. I mean, I just loved everything about it. And then I applied. And when I got in, it was just one of the happiest days for me.
Excellent.
It was great. Then I went there. And in my sophomore year, I met my wife.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. The Lord intervening again. You came here for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But we got to put this person in your life that's going to keep you on the straight and narrow. And here we are.
And I want to name her here because she is a hero. I talk about our family members, military, law enforcement, first responders. You always get pegged with the title of hero, but our unsung heroes are the people that stay home and keep the fires burning and put up with our crap and not know if we're coming home. And I know all that sounds cliche, but it's freaking true.
It is true.
So her name is Nancy. And the reason I'm recognizing her as an unsung hero, we're going to talk about that here in just a minute. You told me a story that, man, if you and I meet in person one day, that's good. I hope I get to meet your wife because I think she's a hero in her own right for what she did.
Oh, she's a champ. She's a champ. Yeah.
So did you both graduate and what was her degree in?
And this is where I did good in life. This is probably like my second goodness decision, right? Because I'm going to tell you, her degree is in biochemistry. So that pretty much tells you everything you probably need to know. I mean, about her level of where she's at in intelligence wise. I got by in business. I was a hospitality major. And that was, I was a hospitality major. I'm going to the fraternity party while she is studying her butt off in her 5 year degree. We graduated at the same time. In 1996, same graduation, we were there. By that time, we'd been together since 93. We had dated for a couple of years now, and then we went ahead and got engaged. I wanted to stay in Florida at the time. And by then, the desire of wanting to be in law enforcement had had taken a hold. It always been there, mm-hmm. but it really, I could act on it then. But she was like, I told her, you got to come with me. She was like, I ain't going with you anywhere unless we're engaged. I ain't doing nothing. I'm not moving from this house.
Put a ring on it, brother.
That's right. So I had to. And best decision ever. Went to Florida State for all the wrong reasons. Left with my wife, literally. And then we moved to Tampa at the time because I'd done some research and some of the apartments that I was applying to, they liked the military experience. They liked that I had a 4-year degree, but they wanted some management experience. So I went to hospitality. I went and worked for Brinker, specifically in the restaurant industry. I went to work for Chili's, but my plan was I'm going to do it for a year and then I'm going to continue to apply. And that's what happened. Actually, I worked for them for only a year.
Were you the guy that sang that song? Baby Back Ribs. Sorry. I thought it was a lame joke.
Hey, well, back in the day, Chili's was all the rage and it was, those fajitas were really good. And, I honed my cooking skills there. But
excellent.
That's what happened. And
but did you ever think about applying for Tallahassee PD? I mean, you're right there in Tallahassee to start with.
I did, or the Leon County Sheriff's Office too, which is the sheriff's office that covers that area. But what happened was my wife's family was in Tampa, and when we decided that we wanted to stay in Florida. We had looked at a couple of places, Atlanta, Alpharetta, I think in Atlanta, or mm-hmm. in the outskirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple of places. But we decided, no, we're going to stay in Florida. And I was happy with that. I deployed a lot when I was in the military, went to a lot of places. So just the idea of maybe just uprooting and moving away from family. My folks lived in South Florida. Her family lived in Tampa. So I said, you know what? We're just going to, we'll stay here. So Brinker, at the time, one of their regional headquarters was in Tampa. And they had a lot of stores there, a lot of restaurants. So it was easy. So as much as we wanted to maybe stay up there, because we did like that area specifically, there's a little subdivision area called Killarn in Tallahassee. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's Southern charm. And it's a great little town. It's grown now, but to raise a family, I mean, it was great. But we moved to Tampa and from there, I was just working at Chili's all the time. I was applying to the different agencies to go into law enforcement, but that takes time, you know, cause you got to do all your backgrounds.
Oh yeah.
Your medicals, you're well aware, probably mm-hmm. better than most on these. So it takes time.
I ended up working for 3 departments.
Jeez.
It sounds like I couldn't hold a job, doesn't it? So, when did you and Nancy get married? Now, did you marry before you went to Tampa, or
No. Actually, we married while we were in Tampa. I was thinking about that when we talked the other day. I was like, man, I better get that date right because she'll kill me if I don't.
Oh yeah,
we graduated in '96, and we got married in '98. So we almost about 2 years later. So we dated for about 2.5 and then we were engaged for about 2.5. And I was thinking about that too, because there were people from my department at my wedding, from some groomsmen to just regular folks that attended it. And by then I was in the department, which I had joined in '97.
Which was?
Orlando Police. I applied to some of the other places. And I was actually considering going to the Florida Highway Patrol, which would have brought me back to Tallahassee because that's where their academy is. Yeah. But Orlando came through first, and they have a really good program that they will hire you and they'll put you through the academy. And at the time, they used to pay the recruits $10 an hour while mm-hmm. going through the academy, which obviously today's time is not a lot of money. But right. back then, that allowed me to be able to leave Chili's, Brinker, and still mm-hmm. have some income while I went through the academy. And Nancy had started working. At the time, she was with the Humane Society. When we first moved to Central Florida from Tampa, she started with the Humane Society for a little bit. And then she transitioned to what she really loved to do, which was teaching. And she went to work for Seminole County Public Schools.
Okay, in Central Florida. Excellent. So how does she feel about leaving Tampa and her family? And I know Orlando is only an hour and a half away, right? But how does she feel about that?
I mean, she would have preferred to stay But at the same time, she had been away from them already mm-hmm. when she went from Tampa to Tallahassee. So it was kind of like old shoe, per se. Yeah. But she would have liked to stay, but she realized that at the time, Tampa PD didn't have the same program to hire somebody as Orlando did. Mm-hmm. And the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office didn't either. So it was, she knew that I had to make some money while I was going through the academy. And I could have worked. That was the other option, go work. But see, then it conflicts because it depends on what time the academy was. If it was a daytime academy, then I had to work. Sometimes they didn't have the academy at night. So she was somewhat sad, but she had been away from them already for 3+ years being in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a thing. And we went back and forth quite often, or they came and visited, or my folks, they would drive up. Or we would just go down and visit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that far away.
No, it's not.
And I mean, I got to tell you, you probably already know this. I'm a big fan of the Orlando Police Department. I do what I can to support the Orlando Police Foundation.
Sure.
Have had the opportunity to meet the current chief, Eric Smith. And there's a captain that I work out with. I'll just name him as Jerry, that goes to the same gym. And there's Lieutenant John. I won't mention her last names without their permission, but... that we've gotten to be buddies and introduced me to the foundation and I'm mm-hmm. in awe of what they do here. Mm-hmm. Everything I've seen, I've been down their headquarters several times. I've had the opportunity to speak to their SWAT guys, to their tactical operations folks. Mm-hmm. I'm in awe of that. It just brings back good memories. And so if anybody from OPD is listening here, I'll be your biggest fan until the day I die. I think it's an outstanding organization.
They got some good people there, some really good rank and file officers. Eric, the chief, I think I told you, I met him when I was in field training and mm-hmm. he was a cop's cop. He's a hard charger, mountain of a man. He's definitely a guy that you want to have next to you during any kind of a fight or an altercation. And I think what they've done good is that through time, as they've experienced the changes that have come about that are favorable and unfavorable towards law enforcement mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and the societal pressures and changes, I think that they've learned from previous maybe mistakes, or they've adapted mm-hmm. and they've been able to change and reinvent themselves. And that's where I think that has worked out well for them.
I agree. I'm trying to get Chief Smith to come on here on the podcast.
He's a good guy.
I went down and met him in his office, and then the lieutenant I was talking about took me down and introduced me, and he was just as gracious as he could be. We took a picture together. He had all these trinkets to give me when I left. I walked through the hallways there and saw the history, the cabinets where they've got the old photographs, and got to see their like an operations center that looks like something you see on television. I mean, it was fantastic. Yeah. I was really, really impressed.
You should have seen him when he was on the street, like trying to put a perp in handcuffs. He was really
something.
Oh, listen, this guy. I was like looking at him like, geez, okay, that's how I got to do it. That's when when you're learning.
When you refer to somebody as a cop's cop, in our culture, there's no higher compliment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. He's a really good guy. So I think that they're in good hands so far.
Now, when you went through the police academy, how long was that?
Police Academy, if I'm not mistaken, it was about 5 months, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Just shy. Five.
Did you go home at nighttime? You didn't have to spend the night there, did you?
No, we went home at night. I mean, every day. It was like a regular work day. We started out, well, probably a little bit more because we did PT in the mornings. So we were, 5:30, we were running.
Yeah.
We ran and ran. And ran, which you have done plenty of that in your life with your departments.
My knees can testify to that.
They can testify to that, right? And then we would just spend the day in class or doing the practicals, everything from self-defense or, just the basics from handcuffing to just learning the legal aspects of the law here in Florida. And then at night we would go home. We'd do that Monday through Friday.
Did you ever get sideways with any of the instructors, any of the other cadets in there? Any funny stories you can tell us about?
We had a guy that he had started with us. And I don't even remember his name. That's just how crazy the whole thing was. And he was just one of these smooth talking, like the Barry Whites the day with the baritone voice and all that.
Yep.
But you can tell because every time he would talk to us about how he got there, he was always talking about his homies back in the hood. And I was like, yeah. I was new to the whole thing. But I'm thinking, how do you ever get here? And you're still talking about the homies back in the hood. Because he's talking like I just saw Little John or whatever it was. I just saw him in the corner. And I'm thinking, haven't you evolved? You gotta leave that life behind. And my God, I remember one day this guy shows up and he is piss drunk to class. Oh. That's how he shows up to PT. How he makes it through, I have no idea. But then he's sweating. So he's sweating all this alcohol and it just reeks. After he showered in the showers and we're in class, and this guy he's slurring his words. And he's like trying to answer the instructions. And it's like, dude, what are you doing, man? Like, what are you doing? I was with the homies. I was the pookie. I was a pookie down the street. What do you mean, pookie? Like, bro, what are you talking about? We're trying to be cops here. You pookie down the street. And I remember that he got removed from class and he was like, go. I mean, are you serious? Listen, I tried very hard to not get on any of my instructor's bad side. I sat on the front row. I was awake. I was prepping to get married. So I had a little different motivation than the kid that just came out of college or had some little management experience. I was like, I need to make this work because I want to do it for myself. But I have my wife, too. See, that's the biggest drill instructor. I don't want to face her at night and be like, yeah, I was talking to the guy about Pookie and I got kicked out of class. So yeah, I really tried really hard to.
I'm sure that was a good thing that he went and found a different career choice because I don't think law enforcement was going to work out for him.
You know, yeah. I mean, but no, it's not. It just wasn't going to happen. And I mean, we had a little bit of bad out of everything. We had the guys that were really, militaristic about the police training. Then we had the guys that want to be like these guys are just practicing law with the instructors, trying to challenge them and what they're being told, what they're learning from the legal advisors. And I'm like, man, you don't know anything. Listen and learn. Or they want to question everything about Miranda versus Arizona or the Terry stops. So it's like, just learn. I mean, so most of my funny stories came when I hit the road. Because then you start to see, like, it's like The Walking Dead. I mean, at least in the midnight shift. Yeah.
We're going to get into that here in just a few. And that's the best thing you can do. When I went through the DEA Academy, that was my third police academy. I was the second oldest guy in my class. And we had multiple classes going through at the same time. And this was before we had our own academy. So we were at the FBI Academy in Quantico. And they selected me and the oldest guy in the class, who was less than a year older than me. And I had 12 years law enforcement experience. He had about 11, and he'd actually had to kill a guy in the line of duty. So they take people from the previous class to talk to the new class coming in and tell them, and there's no instructors. They turn the cameras off and everything. And the big message you're trying to get across to these people is, listen, these people are in charge. And I don't care who you are, how smart you think you are. You've got, at that time, it was 13 weeks. I think it's 17 weeks now. You got 13 weeks to do. If these people tell you to shit in the corner, ask them how high. Just go with what they say. You don't cause trouble. Once you get your badge and credentials, you can tell them to kiss your rear end if you want to.
That's right.
That's how easy it is. And then you had some Q&A with them, and there was this big lady sitting on the front row, and I was shocked that she was even in the academy because of her size. They're extremely overweight. And her first question is, how serious do they take the PT? Well, if you're asking that, you probably weren't ready.
You already know.
Yes, she was gone the first week.
You already know how that's going to go. Yeah.
But that plays right in line with what you said. Man. Just don't challenge them. Just get through it, learn, and then you'll be ready to hit the street. Then you can do what you want to do.
And that's all you have to do. I mean, but some people, you got so many folks from so many varied backgrounds. And everybody has their own way as to how they think it should be. And they think that they got to come in and reinvent the wheel.
Hey, players, this is the end of part one. Part two comes out, as always, on Tuesday. In the meantime, Game of Crimes is now posting interview videos on YouTube. You can find those at Game of Crimes Podcast, and I ask that you click on the subscribe and like buttons. On social media, check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Game of Crimes Podcast and on X at Game of Crimes. Also on Facebook, type in Game of Crimes fan page and join us for some fun. Our website is gameofcrimespodcast.com. We've got a lot more information there, including all our episodes, the book list, which contains the books written by our guests, Game of Crimes merchandise, and more. And for more content, join us on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I have several monthly episodes that range from silly to serious, so come on over and join the fun. In the meantime, everyone stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part 2.